flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Get it to Pritchard. I think they would have been
get
okay.
Get it to Pritchard! Let's go! Come on, get it in! Pritchard makes these ones all the time! Get it in! Come on! I can't believe we lost!
Feels like the pixie dust has worn off that one a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's high noon here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Every Wednesday at noon on a Celtics Wednesday, we talk to Terp, Justin Turpin, WEEI.com. It's Terp time!
Turpin time. There's something there. We get like a sponsorship. Do we have a Turpentine sponsorship?
Do we have a Turpentine?
Is there any Turpentine?
Nick is looking at us like that's a yes. I think Nick is looking at us like that's a firm yes.
Turpentine. Yeah. If you get like a stain or something, you use some Turpentine on.
Is that what it's for? The wood, I think.
Wood. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's for the
gotta
wood.
Buff that out.
Yeah. Teenage.
You don't want to drink it.
No.
That's one thing I learned.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turp.
Nope. That's not gonna work.
Turple.
Turple.
Teenage.
Nope. Nope.
Terp, get
it. Terp, what do you have? How about them C's, Terp?
I like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, a little different.
I did like the Turtles quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know who loved a pizza party? Freaking Ninja Turtles.
Matt Patricia and the Ninja Turtles. I'm surprised Terp's even aware of it. Yeah, I'm surprised Terp's even aware of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
There was like a reboot of
that's what it was.
He doesn't remember the old.
You know, like Megan Fox, April O'Neil.
Damn right.
Now we're
Stephen
talking.
Stephen Amell as Casey Jones.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. What's wrong with this? Every week, this is the first question, Terp. What's wrong with them? We keep asking every single week. I feel like they stay static. They continue to win a game, lose a game, win two, lose one, 500-ish for the last couple of months. They're losing ground in the Eastern Conference. What's wrong?
Yeah, it's now the eighth week we've had that same conversation.
Seriously.
What's wrong with this team? And the answer remains the same. It's just inconsistency on a nightly basis. Like, Joe Mazzulla just doesn't know what team he's going to get. Is he going to get a team like the one that showed up in Golden State and beat the Warriors by 40, though they were really shorthanded? The Celtics have struggled plenty with shorthanded teams, but they showed up and took care of business. Is he going to get a team that can execute down the stretch? Because this team, at least as of recently, hasn't shown they've been able to do that. I mean, the other night, they blew their ninth fourth quarter lead of the year. That was matching their total from all of last year. Like, it's just, it's been the same thing.
So with that, like, obviously the players are the most important thing in all sports, but specifically the NBA. But when you get into blowing fourth quarter leads, how much of that specifically do you look at the coaching staff? Like, is that something that Mazzulla needs to do a better job of, even more so than the players?
I think the other night was really kind of interesting because there does seem to be, you can't deny there was some obvious miscommunication. Like, there's a late switch on the Amen Thompson game winner, and then on the Luke Kornet play too, when he got beat by Shangoon, there was some miscommunication there as well. So some of that does fall back on the coaching staff, but it's just the same stuff. Like, they just keep having these collapses down the stretch that just don't make any sense. That we, like, I keep thinking back to that Pacers series a year ago when there were a couple missed bounces or a couple, you know, missed shots away from being down 3-1 in that series, and they just made the right play constantly. And now what we're seeing is just night and day.
Twitch chat, by the way, and you can ask all your questions to Terp there on the text line and on the phone, 617-779-7937. You can jump in on what's wrong with the Celtics. They say when Terp did a show with Shime, they called it Terp and Shime.
Damn, that's good.
That's nice.
That's really nice.
That's a good Turpentine callback.
Should we
right
get Shime in here on Wednesdays at noon just for the name?
Yeah, just for the name. He just sits here and doesn't say anything? No Celtics.
That's a great name.
Just sits here. Terp and Shime. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it, that's good.
Pretty good anything. Show, too.
Was it?
A strong show.
It sounds like a good listen. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the Celtics, we both blame Tatum quite a bit for the game the other day. You can't coast through a half, parachute in the second half, expect everybody to be locked in. I think that sets a bad tone against a team like Houston. To me, there's a correlation with Dylan Brooks just bombing away wide open threes when your superstar's going through the motions. You had some good numbers on Tatum. What were those again with Tatum when he doesn't shoot X amount of field goals?
When it's under 15 shot attempts, they're 1-3. And that doesn't obviously happen that much, but it's happened quite a few times recently where he has been kind of taking either poor shots or just not shooting the ball at all. And I think the Rockets game is a little bit different just because they're blitzing him on every pick and roll and forced him to beat him as a facilitator. And that's what the Celtics do a lot, and it leads to guys like these open shooters. They're trying to, like, Dylan Brooks shot 10 of 15, and he's just the latest example. Like, Gabe Vincent did it, Derek Jones, Trey Murphy, DeJounte Murray, Russell Westbrook. You could go down the line of all these players.
I like Trey Murphy, by the way, but all the other
Trey
names.
Murphy's, Trey Murphy's a great three-point shooter.
I like Trey Murphy.
He's a great three-point shooter. Nikola Vucevic, Pascal Siakam. Like, you could just keep going down the row of how many players just lit them up. So I think it was a little bit different with the Tatum thing because the Rockets kind of took the Celtics strategy and put it on the Celtics.
How about your usage number that you also had? They're like 7-10 in games where his usage
under
is below
30%. Yes.
So I know that's not a stat everyone loves, but what does that speak to? The games where Tatum is not as involved, they're not as good. I mean, to me, in the NBA, where your superstar matters, that makes sense.
Yeah, it is tough to look at usage on a night-to-night basis. But when you're talking a 17-game stretch here, a sample size, then I think it's fair enough to adjust it. Because when Joe Mazzulla pushed back on the usage rate stat, he mentioned specifically his potential assist. Because, I mean, the Celtics are really process-based, and I know people love to hear the potential assist numbers, but, I mean, it makes sense. And that's
everybody, like, when they pass to me in basketball, is a potential assist.
Not
a lot of actual assists, but there's so many potential
assists.
Had
a chance!
Yeah.
Put it in!
Yeah.
Not a shooter?
No.
Really?
God, no.
Defender?
No, I was not.
Tenacious?
No, I was not good at anything. I played the sport, I was not good at anything.
Yeah. Keith was a shooter.
I was a scorer.
Yeah.
Get down.
I was there for the vibes. I was a vibes guy.
Vibes guy. Yeah, gotta have the vibes. Gotta have it.
Those are important.
Yeah.
Gotta have that.
Yeah.
So if the Houston Rockets had a good game plan, right, and if teams around the league say, hey, they look at these numbers and they say, hey, when Tatum doesn't get a lot of shots, and if we run double teams at him or whatever else it is and make him pass, the other guys might not be able to beat him. All year long, when they've been in these slumps, we always jump to, all right, 7-game series, who can beat them? Nobody can. Then we kind of move on. But if there's enough of a book on the Celtics and ways to beat them, could a really good coach or a smart team say, let's take a look at all the losses the Celtics had. Let's do that. So a team like Cleveland or New York, is it now not the craziest thing to think 4 times in a 7-game stretch, maybe they could, you know, implement a similar strategy and actually beat them in a series?
I mean, I'm not going to sound the panic alarm going into about February, but in their last, 24 games, they're 13-11. They haven't won more than 3 games. They've shown.
Yeah,
I hear a panic alarm out of
there. There has to be some sort of acknowledgement of it. Like, they have won consecutive games 3 times over that stretch. Like,
so
there has to be some sort of acknowledgement.
Yeah. It's a 2-part question. Keith set this up yesterday. It's a good way of doing it.
Thank you.
You can pick any team. You got to name a team. You can pick any team to win the NBA championship this year. Who are you taking, Terp?
Still the Celtics.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you are taking the Celtics or the field, now you don't have to name a team who beats the Celtics, but you can take the entire field. How would you answer that question?
If I'm like a team, just
Celtics or the field,
it's the same
odds.
Celtics.
Yeah.
I'm not as quick to answer it that way.
I mean, that's how Wiggy would answer it. Yeah. Wiggy was like very adamant that there's nothing to see here. They're fine. They're still going to win 60 games is what he said. And he was like, they're fine. I've finally been pushed to the brink now where I'm like, maybe I will take the field. I'm with Terp. If it's just you got to—they're all equal odds.
One
team, I'm picking the Celtics.
Yeah,
Celtics should still be the favorite.
Yeah.
But now you're like, all right, you have every other team, so maybe Denver puts it all together, and Jokic is having an insane season, and he gets it going, or you know, teams shoot lights out or whatever. Like now, it's been enough of a period where they've been talking about the lulls, and then they're like, oh, you guys aren't very consistent, and then they still go out there and lose the game. Now, because they lost their last game, my guess is they blow doors tonight,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's going to be like, oh, yeah, they thought there was a problem with the Celtics, and then they'll lose to the Pelicans, or they'll lose to whoever they play in a couple of, maybe not Philly, but they'll lose to Cleveland. Like, they'll lose one of these games coming up after the so-called, like, oh, see how dumb you were for doubting them game. That's just the way it's been for 2 months.
Yeah.
Two straight months.
And I guess that is a good thing with their ability to bounce back. That means if they win game one, they'll win every series.
No, maybe right? They will. They'll go seven this year.
All they need to do is win game one. But yeah, they've been terrific in bouncing back. They're 13-1 in games following a loss, and they're winning by 22.9 points per game.
Yeah, the only time they lost back-to-back games, the second game was that Christmas game, which they shouldn't have lost, but they
another game that they got lit up from non-shooters. Like Joel Embiid lit them up, like, obviously, Caleb Martin as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So I'm curious because we've done this now a few weeks in a row, and it's Justin Turpin from WEI.com joins us every Celtics Wednesday here on Jones and Keefe. How much has your concern level gone up? You know, your antenna goes up when we keep coming in every week and we go, yeah, they're still playing like crap. Yeah, they're still playing like crap. Yeah, they're good. They're the best team in the league, most talented team in the league, whatever, but they're still playing like crap. How much has it gone up for you? I think Keefe and I are at a different point, but how much has it gone up for you? Now they've kind of been spinning their wheels for a couple of months.
I mean, every week I come in here and the same question is what's concerning or what's the problem with the Celtics? Like mm-hmm. that, obviously there's something. Pressure that comes yeah. with that and there's some yeah. worry that comes with that. And we've been kind of monitoring this, but since they started the season 19-4, they're 13-11. There's a greater sample size of them being a 500, around 500 team as there is them being a dominant 19-4 team. So yes, there is reason for concern for that. But I do think when you've seen what this team's capable of, because they've turned it on before, even in this stretch, we've seen them get back to the old Celtics. Like they did it in Dallas, and granted, Dallas was shorthanded. They did it against Golden State. They've done it in other kind of scenarios. But every time we get in here, and the closer we get to the postseason, the more urgency there is to get this figured out.
Do you use the word urgency. Do you get the sense they have any urgency?
I do. I think at first there was a sense of confidence that like we're just going to find ourselves. We're too talented. Kristaps even said it. It's like we are way too talented to be struggling like this. We're eventually going to figure it out. And I think there is some truth in that. But now I think there is a lot of urgency to get this figured out. Like they feel the pressure. They felt the pressure last year and they just met it. They met it the entire time. This year it just hasn't been the case. And you know, we look at all the numbers from past championships and they've all kind of had similar lulls. But there has to be, they understand, like Jason Tatum, I think, was really telling in his media availability last week when he was talking about skipping steps. And after they went to the finals in 2022, they skipped steps and were only focused on getting back to the finals in 23, and they ended up losing in the conference finals. So they've learned the importance of not skipping steps, yet they're still doing it. That's the problem. It's like every game, they're trying to get away, see what they can get away with without losing the game, if that makes sense. Like they're trying to ease up a little bit, specifically on the defensive end. Like that's been the biggest problem. And ironically, mm-hmm. or not ironically at all, like this is not a coincidence, the fact that they had one of their best defensive seasons last year and they had their most dominant year and won the championship. Like they understand the importance of defense, yet they're kind of getting away from that.
Yeah, I agree. Also, you know, normally when you're talking about like a title team, you should be talking about that team and like the reason why they're going to win is because of how good they are. But one, I guess, sort of feather in the cap of the Celtics is when you look at the other contenders, like it's really hard to talk yourself into any of those teams, which is maybe why people aren't as panicked because
the Cavs have gone into the tank a little bit.
They've dipped. Yeah, they've come back down to earth. And if you just look at the top five title odds, right, who have the best odds, the Celtics still have the best. The Thunder are close. The Thunder are trailing them. They have a kind of similar odds. But you can ask yourself, I know they look good head-to-head with the Cs, but are they ready? Like, that was a big thing last year. Last year, they had a good regular season. But, like, they're very, very young. Like, are they ready? Then it's the Cavs, Knicks, and Nuggets. Those are the next teams. And, like, who on earth can give you, like, a good, well, the Knicks are going to win the title? Like, I just,
they're
going
to gasp by the time they get to the postseason.
I don't see it. Yeah, no, the way they play. And then I love Donovan Mitchell. I'll say it every single time we talk about the Cavs, but I don't look at them as, like, that's an NBA championship team.
No, me neither. And are the Knicks going to win a title? No, but I think they'd give the Celtics a tough series.
Well, they could. They could be a tough out.
Denver, would be the team out of those ones you just mentioned where I still respect
them. I love
Jokic. They've done it. Jokic is the best player in the series. I would still respect
that. But also
that.
The way the seeding is going, and you know, we'll see how far the Cavs end up slipping and if the Celtics can actually go on a run. But to play it all the way out, right now you would have to play the Knicks and the Cavs. So like you could potentially have a harder run to the finals. So that's like the equivalent of like the Chiefs watching the Ravens and the Bills beat each other. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you might have to have whatever you had the easiest path a year ago. There's a chance you could have a much more difficult path this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the path was going to be way more difficult than it was last year.
Yeah,
they had an easy path last year. No one will doubt it, but it doesn't mean you can discredit what they accomplished. And I think that was the biggest problem people had with them, you know, people talking about how easy the path was. But looking at it this year, it's already going to be a lot harder. And that's just because the league got better. Mm-hmm. Like, this kind of talent wasn't around the league last year. And you see teams really turning it up. Like, the Knicks struggled with inconsistency last year. The Cavs were nowhere close to what they're doing this year. Even Milwaukee's starting to figure it out a little bit, though they're wicked inconsistent. So there's talent in the Eastern Conference now. And you look at the West, like the West is going to be a gauntlet. That's going to be some interesting playoff matches, and that's going to be a tough, tough conference to get out of.
Does the home record say anything to you? They're not like a dominant home team. Like, just looking at it, Oklahoma City and Cleveland, the two teams that are in first place, are wagons at home. 22-9, Cleveland is at home.
And the Celtics were last year.
I'm sorry, 22-3. They're 22-3. The Celtics are 15-9.
And they were awesome at home last
year. Yes, they were.
Yeah. The one thing that really stuck out to me about the home record, and I was looking at this the other night after the game, we talked about the blown fourth quarter leads. They've blown 9 of them. 7 of those 9 have come at home.
That's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And it's so bizarre. And
so what does that speak to?
The unraveling. Like, they forget. Like, I keep going back to that Hawks game, even the one the other night against the Rockets when they're having these miscommunications. And just looking at last year, and I think everything's going to be compared to last year, as much as they don't want it to be, as much as people might be like, oh, it's a different year. It is. But that is the benchmark. Like, that's where they want to get back to. So, of course, you're always going to go back to that and compare it to that. And last year, it's like you mentioned, they lost 4 games at home the entire year because they made it a point to come out and take care of business at home. Like that, especially after what happened in the conference finals, they really made it a point to come out and put on a show and take care of business at home. It just hasn't been the same this year, and I think you can point to all the same inconsistencies that we're seeing, but they have been a better road team for whatever reason.
You guys can jump in on this, 617-779-7937. Real quick on something Mega was saying this morning, Celtics Wednesday with the Greg Hill Show. She heard a few things on the Slam podcast, which you and Mega do together, from, and I forget the reporter's name, out of Philly, on Jeff Lurie. Apparently the expectation in Philly is they thought Lurie was ready to pass the team on to his kid and empower his kid into more of a day-to-day role. I think his name was Julian, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Harvard grad.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's also just the fact, and this is one and the same, he's 73 years old. He is a Boston guy, but we talk about John Henry and his portfolio and expanding with professional sports teams. I have to imagine the Eagles would always be number one in that portfolio. It's an NFL team. It's going to make him the most money. So you do have a guy whose eye is going to be on something else as an owner. I thought Mego did some interesting nitpicking there this morning. What do you think of Jeffrey Lurie as a candidate to be the next owner of the Boston Celtics?
I mean, the local ties are obviously fascinating. He bid on the Patriots in 94, but got outbid by Robert Kraft. And, I mean, he sold 8% of his stake with the Eagles recently. So, obviously, that's kind of something you raise your eyebrows at. And it makes sense just with all the local ties he has. And you look at it, and I thought the interview with Mega was interesting because, you know, the reporter mentioned how that his son, the day-to-day basis with the son, and how the son might actually have more ties to the Celtics and more control over the Celtics. So I look at the local ties as the most interesting part of it. Like, I think you can't ignore that, especially with him being born in Boston, going to school in Boston. And he was at a finals game last year. So he was there front and center for what they accomplished. So, I mean, he's had plenty of success with the Eagles. And like you said, I would assume the NFL franchise makes more money than the NBA one, especially with how consistent they've been.
Well, never mind the Celtics payroll and what that would be.
Right, So, no, it's definitely interesting. But again, like, it's still no one has explicitly said that it's just a report right now. And I would assume he does speak at some point this week ahead of the Super Bowl or somewhere.
That's good. That's a good point. You think he gets asked about that leading up to the Super Bowl?
100% he'll get asked.
Oh, he'll definitely get asked about that.
It's just a matter of if he will talk. I'm assuming the owner will talk the week of,
yeah,
or
for
the
sure.
week before the Super Bowl.
He'll talk next week, I bet, somewhere.
So, so maybe we'll get an answer.
There's going to be some clarity there coming up soon whenever he does address it in front of a microphone. But right now, the only one that we actually know is Steve Pagliuca, and he's the only one that's come out and explicitly said it.
Yeah, I'd still take Lurie over Pags. I do wonder if Lurie, there's a few more red flags than we realize. You guys can jump in on this. 617-779-7937. Dedicated Celtics talk every Wednesday on a Celtics Wednesday with Terp. We'll go to John in Rhode Island. Hello, John.
Hey, what's up, man? Love the show. There's only one person that can save us from a Chief Pete, and then you can save the Celtics. It's Uncle Jeff. He's got money. He lets his GMs do the thing. If you look at Howie Roseman, spends money, eye for talent. Brad Stevens is already in place. We need Uncle Jeff back home. Bring him home, baby.
Okay, so
good
He wants Jeff Lurie stay out of the way and let his guys do that. That is in Uncle Jeff's. That's on his resume,
sure
that he kind of lets a guy like Howie Roseman come in, and obviously the owner is going to interject on budgets and things like that, but that's a good thing that he has
his
track record.
How great would that be, having Howie Roseman and Brad Stevens running your stuff?
Couple guys know what they're doing.
That is not
a bad place to be.
Not a bad way to go about it.
Excellent place to be.
Speaking of Brad Stevens, trade deadline next week, anything you I know they're pretty limited in what they can actually do. Do you expect anything to happen?
Yeah, so the number you guys were thinking about on the buyout market is $12.8 million, so it's the mid-level exception. So anyone making more than $12.8 million, they can't go out and get.
Keith brought the, if they trade someone like Springer, does that change that number or no?
Yeah, so they can fluid. But they can't aggregate salaries in a trade. So it's kind of going to be pretty close to even. So what they're really limited in what they can do. And maybe they did get a jump start on what they're looking at with Springer, because there was reports that before the season they were shopping him around. And I think that kind of tied back to Lonnie Walker when he came in and impressed a little bit, try to open up some flexibility there to keep him on the roster. But it's, I would assume they make a trade, but it's going to be very, very minor. And a couple of draft picks or maybe Springer. But, I mean, for all this stuff, all this chatter about them potentially trading one of the top nine, it's not happening.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's not happening at all. I mean, I saw the Jaylen Brown one.
We did 4 years of that or 5 years of Jaylen Brown trades. We can put that to rest.
I led the charge on that one.
I know.
But, okay, in your face, Dakota. That's Terp. Mm-hmm. Every Wednesday, Celtics Wednesday here on Jones and Keefe. Terp, good stuff. As always, you can check out his work, WEEI.com. Follow him on Twitter at Justin M. Turpin. Billy Lanny has all the latest here in trending. When we come back, let's get into Ted Johnson giving Bill, very magnanimous, giving Bill 10% of the credit for the Patriots dynasty. That's right after trending.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 60% Brady and 10% Bill. 15%
which is higher than most.
No, it's higher.
Debatable if it's higher than most. It's the ultimate swerve, though.
Yeah.
It's almost like a M. Night Shyamalan twist where Ted starts the conversation saying, I give Belichick more credit than most.
Yeah.
I'd put it at 10%. Hart and Fitzios fell out of their chairs. They're like, 10? Like T-E-N, 10?
I was just going to say this. I think Hart, even at one point, it might have been after that. Hart's like 10 out of 100?
Yeah, wait a minute. Like, circle back, like 10. So, wait a minute. So there's 90% not Bill? Like, hold on.
But he
dolls it. He's like, Bill's a great coach.
Yeah.
Bill's great for that defense.
How did you just say, excuse me, did you just say 10% Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, what, I stutter?
Give him a lot of credit.
It's hilarious. Do yourself a favor. Go to the WEEI timeline or WEEI Afternoons timeline. Go seek that out on social media.
Yeah.
Just watch Fitzy's reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Just Fitzy's just
Ted Johnson.
So, but like he even like pushed away at one point.
Yeah,
he was like, I need a moment
to collect myself.
Let me ask you guys.
That's disappointed parent.
He is.
He was real upset.
He couldn't believe it. But they, you know what's funny is they both knew it was coming.
They both knew. They both know 10 enough. We know the history there. We like they didn't get along well, but he was okey-doking us. He was like, I actually give him a lot more credit than other people. Not just more than you would think that I would give him, which I would be like, it's probably pretty low.
Right.
But he's like, more than anybody else.
Yeah, he didn't say more than one other person.
No.
More than you or this guy or that guy. He said more than most, which would imply a higher number than 10.
He's like, more than Asante Samuel. That's probably the only guy he gives more credit to Bill on.
That would absolutely.
Marsh. Cassius Marsh, like Asante Samuel, a couple of the other morons out there that just absolutely hate the guy.
No, but you're right. I think they knew it was, on some level, knew it was coming.
But as, 10 does, it was still strikingly low.
It was very low. Yeah. But I think they knew it was coming. As you say, you can lead a horse to water, lead a hoss to water.
He was the hoss, the one-time hoss of the week, Ted Johnson.
We should ask him if he's gotten the trophy yet or not. We should ask him if he has
hoss
of the week trophy.
I think that video went pretty viral. He could be a two-time hoss of the week winner. We haven't given it out yet this week, have we?
So the video absolutely went viral. We have not given it out yet this week. Video absolutely went viral. A lot of people interacting with it, mostly in a negative manner.
Yeah.
You know, some ex-radio hosts here.
We're hot about it.
Very hot about it.
Well, there's a lot of Belichick defenders. We talked about how there are a lot
some more than others.
Well, Ted's not one of them.
Yeah, no.
Ted's not one of them.
No.
But we talked earlier in the week about how, like, Josh McDaniels is really well-liked by a lot of the beat writers.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm sure they think he's good at his job, but he was also probably nice to them and how it goes. But, yeah, Bill has a lot of defenders still. And so when they hear that. And
10% Bill.
That's Ted Johnson. Let me ask you.
But they did a great job. I don't know who did. I don't know if it was Stiz or Dan Ball or whoever, but they quoted 10% Bill, and then they posted the video. So I'm like, oh, that is low. And then I watched the video, and he's like setting it up in this way where you're like, maybe that's not what he said.
Okay, so
and then,
this,
no, he landed on 10%.
No, but
which is low. I was actually surprised how high a percentage you gave him based on the way you've been talking about Bill.
The most insulting number there, the text line is saying we should call him 10 Johnson. The most insulting number in there is not 10% for Bill. The most insulting number is 30% for everybody else.
But he and Wiggy are that 30%.
Okay, if I get
they're
it,
hype themselves
I get
up
it.
A little
they're
bit.
Just, they're a touch biased.
No.
But that number to me is way out of whack. Other guys,
Stephen Neal,
you were all really good players. Ted was a great player. Wiggy, very good player.
Rod Rutledge. Where would you put him?
I would not give Rod Rutledge a ton of the credit.
No.
But, you know, Vinatieri and Law and Gronk and those are all great players.
Richard Seymour, ever hear of him?
Way, way, way too high.
No, it's a
for the rest.
High. It is high.
That's an insulting number. But so I said earlier 50-40-10. 50 for Bill. 50 for Brady, rather. 50. 40 for Bill.
Yeah.
10% for the other guys.
Well,
because all the other guys had a predecessor or someone that came after them. Gronk, there were, you know, tight ends before him.
Yeah.
Not as good as Gronk, but there were tight ends before him.
Watson?
There were wide receivers before Edelman, and there were wide receivers after Troy Brown. You know, there were Darrell Revis was after Ty Law. Like, they were always the beginning and the end of the dynasty. No one spanned it except for Brady and Bill. It's hard for me to give, as great as those players were, any of them too much credit.
But what is unfair is oftentimes...
Because they won without all of them.
No, I know, but you would often hear 50-50 or 60-40, which eliminates all the other players.
Yeah, so
I'm fine giving them, throwing
them something.
Bone.
Let's give him something.
Good point by the text line. Good listener. We actually gave out Hoss of the Week last week, for this week yesterday to Paul Skeens.
Damn it.
Hoss of the Week.
That's Hoss of the Week.
Yeah, Paul Skeens.
Paul Skeens.
Congratulations, Paul Skeens, who's on the cover of MLB The Show with Ellie De La Cruz and Gunnar Henderson.
That's going to be an awkward conversation with Livy Dunn, I think, when you go, where are you going to display the Hoss of the Week trophy? Prominent.
Sure.
It should be featured prominently.
Yeah, next to your gymnastics. Yeah, your gymnastics sixth place finishes or whatever.
Yeah. Right, she's just got...
I don't think she's actually great at gymnastics.
No, I don't think
so. I don't think so.
I don't think that's what she's known
for. Not her calling card.
No, gymnastics not her calling
card. I'm not... Listen, better than me in gymnastics.
Say it again, Nick.
Could have fooled me.
So, yeah, where do you display the Hoss of the Week? It's quite a conundrum.
But I
went 50-40-10. You went?
Yeah, I kind of like that, but what I would even maybe do is... I mean, I might go 51 Brady just to make sure that he has like the majority of the credit
then
maybe knock it down to like 39 Bill, which I don't think is disrespectful. And that number is kind of widened.
51, 39, 10?
Yes.
Price is righted me with that. You kind of did.
Man, you've been getting worked this week. You and Courtney have both been getting bodied this week on your respective shows.
Yeah.
Courtney had a day today.
Outmaneuvered. No, she was very.
Courtney was lashing back out.
It was very funny, but she was you know, really criticizing.
She had it up to here with everybody.
What was the term she used again today?
I don't think you know. They got dumped. One of the terms that she used got dumped.
No, no. What was the whole discussion
point?
Well,
to be fair, most of their show got dumped today.
What were you called? Baby girls?
I was called a baby girl. She thought you and I were both baby girls. And then I was like, well, I don't think that's true. And she's like, all right. She didn't mean it as a disrespect.
She asked me this in the hallway. She said, you're a baby girl. I said, I'm not.
So we don't know what that is.
I don't think I am. It's an emotional man is what it is. A man who's comfortable in his own emotions.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable in anything I do. So
I'm very nervous.
I'm definitely not comfortable with those.
So,
but
somebody that's willing to have very deep conversations, somebody who's willing to cry, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
So she's saying that's a good thing. She said her husband is that, to which point I'm sure Greg and Wiggy were very respectful about that.
Yeah.
And then it just got real nasty.
Yeah.
And then Courtney started making fun of bulge sizes on the show.
Yeah, well, that was
Wiggy Curtis.
That was good. Good place
Take
to go.
Take an aim at everybody. So
having emotions makes me a baby girl?
Yep.
Sharing your emotions.
Yeah.
Like, have you cried in front of your girlfriend?
Yeah.
Often?
Gotcha. All right.
Have you?
Often? No.
Yeah. But you have.
I have.
But not like a million times. So I don't know what the number would be for the baby girl, like for you to qualify as a... Like doing it, I guess, never means maybe you're a robot.
Is there like an online survey I can take to find this out?
That'd be good. I bet there is.
Are you saying you don't have feelings? Well, I'm saying I built up a shell.
I'm not denying that I could be one. I just need to know the
exact
parameters.
Grab a Cosmo and do a a survey if you could.
An actual Cosmo, the drink?
Yeah.
Or the magazine?
Yeah, we'll drink a Cosmo and do the survey.
Might answer your question right there.
But your point is, I'm getting bodied like
you're getting shoved around.
Yeah, feelings.
Yeah, good point.
Like some kind of 14-year-old kid or something.
You have no feelings? No, but that's all good. So anyway, I think as the years have gone on, so even in like 2016, 2018, it might have been closer to 50-50. But then it was these last 5 years. And watching Brady without Belichick, and then watching more years of Belichick without Brady. He already had some, but now he has more. And the way that it went, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Let me update my power rankings. But neither of us are going down to 10.
No.
It lowered Bills, but not that much.
Here is what I think people missed, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody. I'll latch onto one little comment and overstate it, and I make things black and white all the time. And, you know, I think people are missing Ted's ultimate point. I don't think he's giving any coach a lot of credit.
So that's the other thing. Everybody latches on. It's like, oh, he's disrespecting Bill. He was like, how much do you give Reed? 2, 4, 6? Like, he was
right.
I don't think he gives any head coach a significant amount of credit.
I think this to me is a more fair point. Like, are head coaches in the NFL overrated? I mean, I do kind of feel that way. I think people way overstate their impact. Now,
it's way more impactful than the other sports.
Yes,
I don't think it's even up for debate.
I agree with you on that. It's the most impactful out of the four major sports. Maybe it's the most impactful out of any sport. I don't know why I narrow it to four. But
nine pro sports league.
I think it gets overstated with people who watch football. I love the comment from Drake May. I go back to this all the time. People make football super complicated. Coaches do that. Coaches make football sound super complicated, more complicated than it is.
Yeah.
To prove their importance and, like, you know, carve out an avenue for themselves, how much they impact the game.
Yeah. How much credit do you give Andy Reid on a percentage basis?
Yeah, I would give Reid, I think, less credit than I give Bill. So if I'm giving Bill 40, like, I'd give Reid 35.
Yeah. I'd still give him I'd probably 30. Yeah. I'd give him a decent amount.
Yeah, but Ted was giving Reed less credit as well.
And no, I know. So he's consistent.
I think he is consistent. Yeah. He's just not giving any coach a whole lot of credit. I think that gets a little lost.
Yeah.
I'm not a big nuance guy.
No, you're not.
Not big on working the gray areas, but I do think that got a little lost in Ted's point.
Yeah.
But 10% sounds, if we're just going to judge it, it sounds a little low.
It does feel low.
Sounds a little low.
Yeah, but listen, he wants to make sure the others get their due.
The other thing I think people miss with Bill, because Wiggy and Curtis really got into it as well before everybody was getting yelled at by Courtney.
Right. Yeah, it really turned.
Wiggy and Curtis were making points, and Curtis is really leaning in on Brady winning without Bill in Tampa, which I think is fair to lean in on.
But then Wiggy's like, well, Brady got developed in part by Bill.
Brady was developed by Bill.
Yeah.
I think Brady would have won multiple championships wherever we covered that earlier today. I don't know if he would have won 7, but he would have won multiple championships if he never met Bill. I believe that. No way to prove it. That's what I believe. I've cited Kurt Warner as an example. I think people really underestimate how bad Bill was in Cleveland, because looking back on it, we're like, well, it was the Browns. And the Browns suck, and that's a horrible franchise. That's not exactly right. When Bill took over in Cleveland, they had one losing season in 1990. He took over in 91. Prior to that, they made the playoffs 5 years in a row. Like, Bill was not inheriting a disaster franchise. The Browns in the 80s were quite good. Right. They couldn't get over the hump and couldn't get to a Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl, but they were in AFC title games. They melted down in spectacular fashion in some of those games, but they were constantly in the playoffs. Bill did not inherit the modern-day Cleveland Browns. He inherited a team that one season removed was in the playoffs 5 years in a row.
And not to give him credit for the Baltimore Ravens run, but like that,
he wants to take credit for that. Yeah.
No, but like that's that franchise. Yes. So like, what most of us remember of the Browns is sort of this start over Tim Couch, 1999, I think it was, yep. reboot version of the Browns, which is dismal. And they're also one of the losingest franchises. And, you know, but all these years, they were so bad. But you're right. I mean, they had won, not Super Bowls, but they had been pretty consistently a good team. And whether it was, you know, Bernie Kosar or whatever else, like they had some decent runs there.
No. And so, Bill was really bad in Cleveland before he ever met Brady. I mean, it's hard to say what Brady would have been without Bill. We can all have our opinions. Mm-hmm. We know what Bill was before Brady. That we know. We yeah. also know what Brady was after the fact. And Bill's now currently on the McAfee show recruiting in Chapel Hill. I'm looking at him right now. That's where he is. And so I think
they
all
win the ACC title. How much credit if he gets like a Peach Bowl would you give him?
How's Bill doing on the recruiting?
A Fenway Bowl. If he wins the Fenway Bowl, would you change your mind?
Well, maybe.
Give him a higher percentage?
How's he doing on the recruiting trail? Maybe we could spend some time on that.
In all seriousness, North Carolina has had some good college quarterbacks. You know, maybe Drake May ends up being a great pro quarterback,
yep.
but like they had a decent run.
Sam Howell, Mitch Trubisky, Drake May, those are all NFL quarterbacks.
All NFL quarterbacks recently.
Varying degrees of NFL
They kind of mostly stink, but maybe one of them will be great.
Ronald Curry.
I liked Ronald Curry.
Ever heard of him?
I have.
617-779-7937. Ted Johnson giving Bill Belichick 10% credit on WEEI Afternoons yesterday. You can hear them today at 2 o'clock along with Andy Hart and Fitzy. So stay tuned for that. We'll get back into Drake May as well, along with all your phone calls on Bill Belichick, how much credit he deserves. Drake May's going to the Pro Bowl. That sounds like a good thing. Is it? We'll get to it next. That was Mike Vrabel on with WBZ TV. Discussing Drake May, now a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, Pro Bowler. Congrats to Drake May. The way he was going through different ways to describe him just immediately makes me think of the scene in Along Came Polly where he's like, he's active, he's sexual, he's sexually active within the community.
Within the community. Like,
that's exactly what I thought. When you like take your time and you just like one word after the other, he's athletic, he's mobile. Sexually active within the community. That's all I can think of. These are all pros for now one-time Pro Bowler Drake May.
Here's what I'll say about Vrabel's commentary on Pro Bowler Drake May.
Yeah.
He's not effusive in his praise, but I kind of like that. I kind of like that Vrabel isn't anointing May.
You got to humble the Pro Bowler somehow.
Yeah, so what I hope is that Vrabel actually likes Drake May a lot, and part of the reason he's here and took the job is because of Drake May, but he's not going to, as Bill Parcells would say, put him in the Hall of Fame. So he is going to make him earn it, and Vrabel is kind of curbing the compliments and his praise of Drake May for a reason. If you want to take it literally and say he's kind of meh about Drake May, maybe he doesn't love May. I don't know why he'd take the job.
No, I think he does. I think he's just, this is the way he's going to go about it. This is the smart thing to do.
That's what I hope.
And I think, you know, we are guilty of this sometimes. A lot of fans are. We're just so used to seeing Mac Jones that when you see Drake May, we're putting him in the Hall of Fame. Like, we're talking about him and, like, what he's going to be able to do. But the guy won one game, you know, and, like, he didn't have a lot of help. But I don't know how many people... Or starting quarterbacks in the NFL played a dozen games, won one of them as the full-time player in the game, and had this type of excitement.
No, it's true.
Like, who wins one game? Like, Peyton Manning? Did he win one game? Like, maybe him?
Manning, I think, won three as a rookie, I think.
Or maybe it was. Yeah, but it was bad. But he also started the whole year. Didn't get a chance to start the whole year.
Burrow didn't play a whole year. I think even he won more than one, I think, as a rookie. Let me double-check that.
So it's, you know... There's not too many guys that have had this kind of hype around them. You know, you get the Dan Orlovskys of the world talking about how he could be one of the best players in the league and all this other stuff. It's like, yeah, no, I like that too. I like the pick. I think he had a really strong rookie year. He won a game. Like, let's get a little bit more before we hype the guy up so much.
Peyton won three. Burrow won two. He did have a tie. Burrow's 2-7-1 as a rookie.
So better winning percentage.
Yeah, much better winning percentage. 2-7-1 before Burrow got hurt as a rookie. So, yeah, I mean... This is why I don't love that May's in the Pro Bowl. And you said earlier, Keith, it probably doesn't make a huge difference one way or the other. You're probably right. At the end of the day, I don't think it's overly significant.
Well, because I think what's funny about this is the fact that Mac Jones was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
So even if he's like, and I don't get the vibe from Drake May that he's going to be like, hey, look at me, I'm a Pro Bowler. But even if he does for a second, he's got brothers who are going to be like, oh, yeah, you and Mac Jones. The guy they ran out of town was also a Pro Bowler. So, like, maybe get back in the gym. Like, that kind of thing. I don't think it's going to go to his head.
I don't think so, but I would feel better about it. Like, I don't want to make a big deal about this. We're not spending all day on it. We just mentioned it earlier since he's in the Pro Bowl, and I'll mention it again. I would feel better if Drake May earned his way to the Pro Bowl. And he has not earned his way to the Pro Bowl. A bunch of quarterbacks said no.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the Pro Bowl is now. I'll pull up the J.J. Watt tweet. I saw Andy Hart retweet this yesterday.
Yeah, he's right.
He's like, hang on.
So especially the fact
it's when you get five alternates deep, just call it the Participation Bowl.
Yeah.
Is what J.J. Watt said.
No, but I also, this is, a bigger picture question. So they've already scrapped the game itself.
Correct.
So you don't need to keep replacing guys. Just the guys who can go, play charades or whatever you're doing. Everybody can put it on their, football reference or on their LinkedIn. It helps deciding who's better than who has a chance at the Hall of Fame and whatnot. But you really cheapen it at that position, more so than any other, because there's only 32 starters. If you want to really go through and see how many guys actually started, let's call it 12-plus games, it's even less. The guys are turning it down. So, like, more than a third of the quarterbacks in the NFL are Pro Bowlers? Like,
yeah.
That's dumb. That shouldn't be. And because you're not even playing a real game, it shouldn't matter, like, who goes and gets that recognition.
So, again, Twitch chat is mocking me. $10 Shake says, Jones saying, I don't want to make a big deal out of this. Will never not be funny. I really don't think we're making a big deal about it. I'm telling you, some people are fired up about Drake May making the Pro Bowl. You're on to a young quarterback, and that's fine. If you are fired up about it, that's great. I just wish he earned his way there. And they won one real game,
no,
is what he won, to your point.
It's not as bad as Snoop Huntley and some of these other guys, but
it's Mac earned his way more than Drake.
He played the whole season, Mac, made the playoffs.
Mac earned his way to the Pro Bowl. I mocked that Pro Bowl.
No, I know. No, that was a cheap Pro Bowl, too.
Mac
but it was.
Earned his way to that Pro Bowl way more than Drake May earned his way to this one. Now, I like Drake May as a prospect much more. I think he's going to be a much better quarterback, but Mac earned it more than Drake.
But there are so many examples of bad quarterbacks making the Pro Bowl that I think there's no way this can get, like, out of hand.
Yeah, so at the end of it, maybe it's not a huge deal, but I wish Drake May next year came out and the Patriots won 9 games and were on the brink of a playoff spot and he had 4,000 yards and he was a reason they were winning. I'd feel better about that being his first Pro Bowl appearance than this, where C.J. Stroud, who already was an alternate, said no.
Patrick Mahomes, you didn't even ask him because he's playing in the Super Bowl.
Now you're going with Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Do you think he can be the fifth best quarterback in the AFC next year?
Maybe.
So that's probably be the high part.
We all agree on the top four.
Top
four,
Mahomes, yes.
Allen, Lamar, Burrow in some order.
So it's he and Herbert pretty much duking it out for fifth.
Could he be better than Herbert next year?
Herbert and Stroud?
Yeah, would I like wager on that? No, but I also wouldn't rule it out that he could be better than those guys.
Yeah.
Here's a good name, Aikman. Aikman didn't win any games as a rookie. He was winless as a rookie.
Oh, yeah.
But he
didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Thank you. That's what I was just going to say. He didn't go to the Pro Bowl. He didn't go to the Pro Bowl until 91.
Yeah, no, and I guess my point was less talking about, he was 0-11 his first year. But no, my point was more how that player is described going into their second season. I wasn't in the media in 1990 or whatever, but I'm wondering, like, around Dallas, like, hey, we found our guy.
Yeah,
like, he's definitely the guy. Probably
I don't think
not.
That was the conversation.
Probably like, Jesus, this guy didn't win a game last year.
They were probably still yelling about firing Tom Landry.
My guess is there was more hype about Drake May going into year two based off of a 1-2-0 win season than some of those other quarterbacks.
So you guys can jump in on this. 617-779-7937. I see a variety of phone calls hanging out.
All right, a potpourri.
10% is how much credit Ted Johnson is giving Bill Belichick. People want to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
People want to talk about Drake May. I see some phone calls on the Celtics as well. Brian in South Kingstown hanging on from our Terp discussion earlier. So we'll get to your phone calls. We'll also, if you want to line up on them, get back to the Bruins. Disaster game last night.
Oh, no.
And I'd imagine some changes coming for this team moving forward. Perhaps including their captain. That's Joe Sacco last night.
Sacco Sai.
The embodiment of this Bruins season was from Joe Sacco. So we'll get to all your thoughts on that coming up next.